Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on a genuinely pivotal and, I mean, a truly complex character from early American history, John C. Bennett.
Oh, absolutely. For a very brief, very chaotic period in the early 1840s, he was Justice Smith's right-hand man.
And that's putting it lightly. He was the mayor of Nauvoo, quartermaster general, head of the powerful Nauvoo Legion.
He held almost every major civic and military post, which is what makes his eventual and very explosive expose so challenging for historians.
Right. How do you untangle fact from fiction?
Exactly. Bennett was, by many accounts, a known scoundrel, a philanderer. His motive for publishing his tell-all book in 1842 was, well, it was clearly revenge after his excommunication.
But, and this is the critical challenge for us, his book contained these very specific, sensational details that later history actually confirmed.
Through independent records, testimonies decades down the line, it's a mess.
So our mission in this deep dive is to weigh the truth in a historical record where every single primary source is, well, intensely biased.
You've got Bennett who wants revenge. Joseph Smith, who needs to protect his authority.
Emma Smith, trying to protect her family name. And you've got all these whistleblowers with their own axes to grind.
It's a minefield of motives.
So we're going to focus on two of the major scandalous controversies that Bennett's claims really blew wide open. First, his involvement in what was called spiritual wifery.
The early secret code name for polygamy.
And second, the deeply unsettling allegation that he was acting as an abortionist for the church leadership.
It's messy, but, you know, by digging into these contradictions, we can get a much clearer picture of how power and secrecy really worked in this frontier theocracy.
Okay, so let's start with the breakup.
Huh?
Bennett gets excommunicated in May of 1842. It's mostly over sexual allegations, right?
Right. Using religious pretenses to manipulate women. But before he totally breaks with the church, something truly bizarre happens.
The affidavit.
Yes. On May 17th, Bennett signs this pre-written document, this affidavit, publicly stating that Joseph Smith never taught him that, and I'm quoting here, illegal, illicit intercourse with females was under any circumstances justifiable.
So he takes all the blame. He basically says, it was all me. Joseph Smith is innocent.
It looks like a full confession, a complete exoneration for the prophet. But then almost as soon as he's out of Nauvoo, he retracts the whole thing.
And claims he was forced to sign it.
Under duress. And the story he tells is, well, it's pure melodrama.
It is. He claims Smith locked him in the Nauvoo Lodge, pocketed the key, and then pulled a pistol on him.
And threatens to either make catfish bait of him, which is a pretty gruesome frontier threat, or hand him over to the Danites.
And for anyone who doesn't know, the Danites were this secretive group, a kind of paramilitary force that were alleged to enforce Smith's will, sometimes violently.
So the threat would have felt very real. But this is also where we have to be skeptical of Bennett's story.
Exactly. Bennett's biographer, Andrew F. Smith, makes a great point. He says Bennett's actions afterwards just don't match that level of fear.
Right. If you genuinely believe the prophet of the church is about to have you killed and dumped in the Mississippi River, you don't stick around.
But he did. He stayed in Nauvoo for weeks after being excommunicated. Joseph Smith even publicly thanked him for his service as mayor. It just doesn't sound like a man fleeing for his life.
That's the big logical hole in his story. And yet, there's a counterargument that gives his claim some weight, even if the details are exaggerated.
From the Warsaw Signal.
Yes, from Thomas C. Sharp, the editor. A non-Mormon, very critical of Smith, he writes an editorial in August 1842 and basically asks, why did Joseph Smith need an affidavit in the first place?
It's a great question.
Sharp's argument, and it's a powerful one, is that innocent men do not generally attempt to justify themselves before they are accused.
It shifts the whole focus. The fact that Smith was so desperate for a public denial suggests he knew these accusations were already floating around.
Exactly. It looks like he's trying to get ahead of a story that's already true. Which brings us right to Bennett's core claim in his expose.
His whole motive was basically, you excommunicated me for this, but you were doing the exact same thing.
Precisely. He claims Smith was practicing the same activities, seducing women using religious doctrine that he'd just been kicked out for.
And we should probably clarify a key distinction here. Bennett was kicked out for spiritual wifery, which the church publicly framed as just, you know, prostitution, illicit sex.
But what Smith and his inner circle were secretly practicing was divine plural marriage. Two very different labels for what looked to an outsider like the same act.
And Smith had a huge incentive to keep that secret, especially from his wife, Emma, who hated the idea.
So if Bennett could prove Smith was also using religious pretense to seduce women, it would expose the hypocrisy of the entire leadership.
It's where the evidence starts getting really concrete.
Yes. In August 1842, Bennett publishes the Happiness Letter.
Infamous, yeah.
It's this piece of manipulative writing, which most historians attribute to Smith, aimed at Nancy Rigdon.
His counselor, Sidney Rigdon's daughter.
Right. And it uses this moral relativism, arguing that something wrong can become right if God commands it. It's a pretty clear attempt to coerce her into a sexual relationship.
So that shows the kind of theological justification that was being used behind closed doors. Smith's public defense, though, was swift.
Swift, but deeply misleading. The official church newspaper, The Times and Seasons, published this sweeping denial of plural marriage, signed by 12 men and 19 women.
But here's the kicker.
The contradiction is just staggering. We now know that some of those women who signed the denial, like Eliza R. Snow, were already sealed to Joseph Smith as plural wives.
They were actively lying in public to protect him.
And Eliza R. Snow even justified it later. She claimed they were only lying to condemn Bennett's version, his prostitution, not the sacred divine plural marriage they were practicing in secret.
So they're playing with definitions. It's extreme deception.
It is. But this brings us to the most compelling piece of evidence Bennett had. The thing that proves he was a genuine insider, no matter how much he exaggerated.
The list.
The list. In his expose, he listed 7 of Joseph Smith's plural wives, but only by their initials. Mrs. A.S., Miss L.B., Mrs. B., and so on.
And this is the smoking gun. This is where the balance of evidence just tips heavily in Bennett's favor.
It really is, because historians later went back and verified at least 6, maybe all 7, of those identities. Mrs. A.S. was Agnes Smith. Miss L.B. was Louisa Beeman. Mrs. B. was Presendia Buell.
The initials were a perfect match for women we now know were his plural wives.
This is huge. It confirms Bennett had detailed, specific inside knowledge of Smith's most protected secret. He wasn't just spreading rumors.
You can't just dismiss him as a scoundrel when he provides names or initials that check out decades later.
And his knowledge went beyond just names. He told the story of Joseph Smith making advances on Sarah Pratt, the wife of one of his apostles, Orson Pratt.
And when she refused him.
Bennett claimed Smith threatened her directly. He supposedly said, "If you should tell, I will ruin your reputation."
Which is a chilling threat. And there's evidence he followed through, isn't there?
There is. We have reports that in a public speech, Smith later just completely destroyed her character, calling her a blank from her mother's breast.
He ruined her reputation exactly as Bennett said he threatened to do.
It shows a pattern, a vindictive willingness to destroy any woman who rejected him or threatened to expose the secret.
It's a detail that really grounds Bennett's claims in a grim reality. But now we have to move to the next layer of this, which is maybe even more controversial.
The abortion controversy.
Yes. The theory here is that Bennett, who was a doctor, was performing abortions for Joseph Smith. The idea was to avoid any celestial consequences, unwanted pregnancies, from these secret plural marriages.
And the earliest mention of this actually comes from Hiram Smith, Joseph's own brother.
In the church's own newspaper, The Wasp.
Right, in July 1842. Now, you have to remember, the bias here is extreme. Hiram is trying to completely discredit Bennett to protect his brother.
Of course.
Yet in that very affidavit, Hiram claims that Bennett had offered women medicine to produce abortions provided they should become pregnant.
So even in the act of smearing Bennett, Hiram has to admit that abortion is a concept being discussed in Nauvoo. He puts the idea out there himself.
Exactly. And we also have to think about the historical context. In the 1840s, abortion didn't carry the same legal or moral stigma it does today, especially early in a pregnancy.
It was often induced with herbs and oils,
right,
not necessarily surgery.
Correct. And midwives and doctors knew how to do it. Patty Sessions, a known midwife in Nauvoo, would have had that knowledge. The capability was definitely there in the community.
But the allegations get much more specific later on.
Much more. In an 1886 interview, Sarah Pratt gave this incredibly vivid detail. She said Bennett once showed her an instrument.
What did she call it?
A pretty long instrument of steel, crooked on one end. And she claims he told her it was for a little job for Joseph.
A little job for Joseph?
Wow.
She even claimed there was a sort of hospital across the flat where abortions were a regular practice, all to keep Smith's secret relationships from producing children.
Now, we have to acknowledge that testimony is from 40 years after the fact.
Yeah.
Memories can change.
They absolutely can. But it's not an isolated claim. William Law, who was a high-level whistleblower, a former member of the first presidency,
So, a credible source.
a very credible source, in 1887, he stated that he had heard abortion was practiced in Nauvoo. And crucially, he said that another doctor, a Dr. Foster, told him about Joseph getting no issue from his intimate relations.
Suggesting that some method was being used to prevent births.
Exactly. So on one hand, you have Bennett himself, who never actually mentions abortion in his own exposé.
Which is strange, given how explosive it would have been.
It is strange. But on the other hand, you have multiple independent witnesses, Joseph's brother Hiram, a high-level defector like William Law, all claiming that the practice was known and used to protect the prophet.
It's a complicated web of testimony.
It led the historian Fawn Brodie to make a pretty blunt assessment. She wrote, "There can be no doubt that Bennett was an abortionist. But whether he was Smith's official abortionist is, well, it's circumstantial. It's all tied to these highly motivated accusers and defenders."
So that really leaves us with the core conflict. Bennett was this incredibly complicated figure. He mixed these sensational, self-serving claims like the pistol threat.
With startlingly accurate, verifiable facts, the list of wives is the big one.
You can't ignore it.
And the implications of the abortion claims are theologically profound. The whole justification for plural marriage in Doctrine and Covenants 132 was to raise up a righteous seed for God,
To have children.
to have many children. If there's testimony from Hiram Smith, from William Law, from Sarah Pratt, that abortions were being performed, or that Smith had no issue, it just fundamentally undermines that entire stated doctrine.
It suggests the practice was really about sex and secrecy, not about raising up a righteous seed.
Exactly.
So we have to come back to that central question. Was John C. Bennett a self-serving scoundrel looking for revenge? Or was he a necessary, if, deeply flawed whistleblower?
I think he was probably both. His own corruption, his willingness to manipulate and lie, is what allowed him to get inside the inner circle and then expose it. He was a scoundrel who, because of his access, ended up telling the truth.
And for you listening to this, we've seen how both sides, the accusers like Bennett and Pratt, and the defenders like Joseph and Hiram Smith and Eliza R. Snow, all had these powerful motives to lie, to shape the narrative for their own ends.
For revenge, for protection, for self-justification.
So, what does it take for you to determine historical truth when every single primary source is compromised? Where do you draw that line between a necessary truth and just an opportunistic lie? That's what we want you to mull over.